From Everbank Field in Jacksonville, this is Jaguars.com Live. A weekly look inside the Jacksonville Jaguars organization. Jaguars.com Live starts right now.
On this windy Wednesday, a look at the South Bank across the St. John's River from Everbank Field. Whitecaps on the river earlier today. And winds of change at Everbank Field the last couple of days as well. Welcome to Jaguars.com Live. JP Shadrick with you. Some players out of here who've been around for a little bit. We'll get to that coming up. Let's get to the big three things today. That is number one, Mercedes Lewis, after 12 seasons with the team, released. Alan Hearns is gone as well. We'll get reaction from those two veteran players being out of here. Chris Trapasso, CBS Sports NFL draft writer. We'll break down what the Jags could do at 29 after the happenings this week. And yes, top tweets with Ashlyn Sullivan. And we'll hear from Tom Coughlin on camera, a rarity these days. He spoke with Ashlyn this morning. We welcome in Brian Sexton, John Osier. What's up, guys? How are we doing on this lovely Wednesday?
Good. A lot of W's at the top there. A lot of white caps and wind. And let's go.
Sound like a morning radio guy.
Thank you.
Ever done that?
No. So
we're ready.
The winds of change. Yes, the veterans are gone. Which is more surprising, Mercedes Lewis or Alan Hearns?
To me, it's Mercedes. Alan Hearns, since they paid him, missed 11 games, was not the same playmaker that he had been before they paid him. So to me, Mercedes, at the number that he had, which was just about $4 million, was a key instrument in their running game. He was a big part of what they had done. So to me, that was a surprise. But when they signed Austin Seferian Jenkins, who's 270 pounds, clearly they think he can be a run blocker for them as well. I didn't see him as that, but talking to people yesterday, they said, no, this guy can get out and block. So the surprise to me was more on Lewis.
Yeah, I mean, I had been writing all offseason that there was a very strong chance. I wasn't the only one. A lot of people thought, as far back as last year's training camp and preseason, there had been rumblings Alan Hearns could be traded, might not be here.
Well, it's $7 million salary cap figure. That was
right. I think he knew that. So that was sort of expected. But when I got the news that Mercedes was going to be released, it was surprising. And with both players, a little bit sad to see him go. I mean, there's guys that you enjoy covering, and certainly in terms of class individual and all that, that the fans don't care that much about. But they were certainly those guys. I'm with Brian. I was surprised with Mercedes. But what you wonder is, Brian, Austin Seferian Jenkins obviously is a huge part of their tight end equation. Releasing Mercedes tells me that I think there's a good chance that they address that in the draft in the first three rounds still, because I think they will go, as we've talked about, a two tight end, heavy tight end emphasis, and it sure seems to open it up for that to me.
Without a doubt, the tight end now becomes a focal point, whether it's in the first or second round. I would think by the end of the second round, though, those top tier of guys are probably going to be gone.
A few of those guys might be in the third. I mean, when I do my mocks, it's not as much of a given as you would think that there'll be one go in the first round. And so if there's not, remember, with the tight end position, a lot of teams already have a frontline guy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's not an automatic that just because a guy is high in value there, he's going to get taken. It's all about fit. And the Jaguars are one of the few teams that really, really, really need one. So I think there could be value there in the third round.
Here's one other thing to consider, and that is this is a team that all of a sudden needs salary cap room. And you saw that with the restructuring of Telvin Smith. Something that this team hadn't done was prorate the signing bonus over the length of the contract. And I have to tell you, I did one of these this morning when I saw restructure.
I don't like that.
And prorated, because that's what got this team in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, it's been 15 years. They have more cap room. They have different guys working it. I'm not saying because they did this that all of a sudden it's trouble, but that's something they've avoided with a lot of the contracts. The reason that they could punt on Jared Odrick and Julius Thomas and some of these guys is they took a big bite of that apple in the first 2 years of the contract. Now you're pushing money out, albeit – they've done it in the last 2 weeks with Andrew Norwell, right, who's a guard. There's mm-hmm. value there. Mm-hmm. You believe he's going to be there. And with Telvin Smith, a linebacker that they see being a long-term guy here. But it tells you you've got to release a Mercedes. You've got to release an Alan Hearns because you're up against the cap. You need every dollar.
And that's what happens when a franchise feels like they're close to taking that step and being elite year after year, some of those guys have to go.
Absolutely.
You got to make bank. You got to make the payroll.
Without a doubt. And it leads to an interesting conversation next offseason when you look at guys like Calais Campbell and Malik Jackson and Marcel Darius and A.J. Boye.
Somebody's got to give, right?
Some of those guys are going to have to go after this next year. So it all plays back into what Dave told you at the Combine, and that is to try and finish this thing off.
Well, finish it off, and it also, to me, it means this year's draft is going to be fascinating. Do they draft with the idea that they've got to draft young players to potentially replace some of those defensive players? Or are they drafting with, hey, let's go offensive guard, let's go tight end, let's go running back, let's really push the offense and just go for it? I think the first three or four rounds of the draft will be interesting in that respect because I could see either plan making sense. One's very long-term. The other is very win now.
They need more drafts like they've had in recent years.
Oh, yeah.
They need to hit on it. Not just that. Remember, A.J. Boye and Andrew Norwell were undrafted rookie free agents. They need a couple of those guys, too.
Do you think they're done signing guys for the draft here?
Is there anybody left?
I don't know. I don't think so. Not many. Those guys you really go after, right?
I can't imagine it, but there could be somebody that comes free. I mean, I bet there's a team that looks at Mercedes Lewis that didn't have tight end, especially a 33-year-old guy who is a dominant run-blocking tight end on their list, but all of a sudden he comes free and they say, well, let's go take a look at him now. He can still play. There could be a guy like that, but I would think for the most part this is their team with whatever they do in the draft.
I think they are, but at the same time, they cleared some space. They have room. If they want to do something, they have room to do it. It would obviously mean causing more of a long-term issue, which is a little – I'm with you, Brian. I was around when they had to make all the change. That's a little queasy feeling. But there's certainly room to do it, and that quarterback question's still hanging out there.
Yeah,
I still wonder what they're doing at backup quarterback. No matter what you do at backup quarterback, it's not going to be a $700,000 thought if it's a veteran. So who knows?
You know, it's amazing, JP, just sitting here thinking about it. This time last year, we're talking about all the cap room. Right, I mean, just gobs of cap room, and now all of a sudden they're up against it, and they're restructuring contracts. And we went from talking about, well, could they be a playoff contender to now they're a Super Bowl contender. It's amazing how fast things change in this league. It didn't used to be that way. It used to take time. Now it changes almost on a daily basis.
Yeah, 2-3 years ago, it was they had $40, $50 million, but they had to spend money to get to the threshold, and now they're up against the other threshold.
Which means you've got to draft well, and you've got to structure those contracts well.
Interesting.
Which they have started the contracts.
You bet.
Again, Brian, I think it should be noted, when we talk about being queasy about the cap, this is not the early 2000s in terms of how it's structured. They have guys they can release and not have the run-up. The run-up is what killed them, as you know.
Right.
Meaning taking a signing bonus 3 years out, 2 years out, 1 year out, all of a sudden having it all count against the cap. For the most part, they don't have that situation where there's going to be cap hell. But they're going to have cap decisions moving forward.
What,
that's a big difference.
It is a big difference, but it's also a big decision because what if this defense plays to that number one standing like they did last year and you get big years out of Calais and Malik and Marcel and AJ? I mean, these are the guys whose numbers. There's almost $30 million in cap savings on the three defensive linemen alone, right? Well, if you decide, well, we need the cap room, so we've got to let some of this go, well, who do you have to replace?
That's going to be one of those guys.
Absolutely. So you've got to draft really, really well. You've got to be spot on. You'll make some mistakes. It's a crystal ball business, but you've got to have more hits than misses this year.
Plenty of social media reaction coming up in top tweets a little while from right now. When we return, though, draft strategy for the Jaguars. Does what happened this week change any of that? Chris Trapasso, CBS Sports NFL draft writer, joins us in 60 seconds on Jaguars.com Live.
Jag stands. Experience Everbank Field like never before. Visit Jaguars.com/tours and book a guided behind-the-scenes tour. Hear stories of great plays by Jaguars legends. Get up close and personal with the famous video boards and see why the Travel Channel named Everbank Field is one of the 15 bucket list destinations for any football fan. Discounts available for children, first responders, and military. Visit Jaguars.com/tours for tickets and details. See you at the bank.
What do you call a pack of Jaguars? A jamboree. The Jacksonville Jaguars want to offer a big thank you to the five local companies who've made the Jaguars Jamboree a party that never stops. Everbank, Baptist Health,
Dreamfinders Homes, Publix, and U.S. Assure. Each of these partners provides unmatched support and dedication to the team year in and year out and help make game day special. Jaguars fans, join the Jamboree and support these companies and all the partners who support the team.
Coming up Thursday, April 5th here at Everbank Field, the United States women's soccer team against Mexico in a friendly leading up to World Cup qualifying. Tickets available at ussoccer.com. Should be fun. The head coach was around earlier this week. Manager? Head coach? What do you call it? Head coach? Manager?
Sure. Soccer's your game.
I was going to say, I call it a preseason or an exhibition game. You call it a friendly. So
well, there you go.
I want to go to the unfriendly.
Me too. Yeah. Me too.
I can see that out of both of you.
All right, enough soccer.
Let's get to the phone lines and welcome our guest today from CBS Sports NFL draft writer Chris Trapasso is with us. What's up, man? How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. It's been a little bit of a crazy week around here at Everbank Field. Some veteran players were released. Where does that change what you think of the Jags at 29? Anything that happened this week? Or are you still on board with what you had in your last mock, which was a wide receiver?
I think tight end is obviously a little bit more of a need. I mean, they brought in Austin Seferian Jenkins, but to lose just that locker room presence in Mercedes Lewis, who turned into, you know, one of the best run blocking tight ends in football, who could also be a force in the red zone, I think that kind of pushes up that need just a little bit. But in general, this week didn't change that much with what I think the Jaguars should and ultimately will do in the draft.
The wide receiver position, though, is fascinating because there could be a bunch of guys near the end of that first round, into the second round, that are right there for the taking. There could be a run right around there. That's kind of what you feel, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think DJ Moore, who I have going to the Jaguars in my latest mock, is someone that had a really good combine, played at Maryland with, let's just say, not the greatest quarterback situation, and was really their only real threat in the passing game, is great after the catch, and I think he would be someone that would right away become a favorite target for Blake Bortles because he wouldn't have to push the ball down the field. But when you have Dante Moncrief there, who is someone I was really high on coming out of Ole Miss in the 2014 draft, hasn't necessarily lived up to his potential but has the talent. Then you have Marquise Lee, and then you have Keelan Cole, who played very well down the stretch and in the playoffs last season. It might not be the biggest need, but I really think that the Jaguars are, you know, picking where they are and coming off the season that they just had with so much talent on the defensive side. They're really in a spot that you would kind of label as that luxury position where they can really just take the best player on the board.
Chris, I'm not of the belief that they're going to go quarterback. Some people around here, fans particularly, think they might. What quarterback would, or I'm assuming the top four are gone. What are the chances of a quality quarterback there being there at 29? How far do Jackson and Rudolph fall? Are they there around that time?
I think it would be a stretch if either of those two were there, but it wouldn't shock me if one of those guys do fall into the later portions of the first round. And I think obviously, each guy would actually, in their own way, fit with what the Jaguars would potentially want to do in the future. That if they like Blake Bortles, but they want a little more downfield accuracy, I think Rudolph could be someone that would be a pretty smooth transition. But I've, you know, for weeks now on other radio interviews, podcasts, even in some articles, labeled that Jacksonville picking Lamar Jackson would be probably my favorite pairing in the first round for him, because he's a player that can, I think, transcend the quarterback spot, and not necessarily that he's going to be a Hall of Famer, but just with his running ability and that he would really be asked to just not turn the football over and go to a team with a great defense. I think that would be a lot of fun, and I think offensive coordinator Nate Hackett, who really was one of the first coaches to use, you know, RPOs and package plays when he was up in Buffalo, would just have so much fun with Lamar Jackson, you know, maybe in 2019 or 2020.
Chris, it sure looks like it's lining up that we could see quarterback go 1, 2, 3, 4, or, you know, 1, 2, 3, 5, 6. It appears like we could see the run on quarterback at the very top of the draft based on the Jets move up and the Giants' leverage point. Heck, the Browns even have a leverage point if they want to go back, if they take quarterback at number one. So I guess the question is, do you see it lining up for the quarterbacks to go 1 through 4? Is that a possibility? And secondly, how many quarterbacks go in the first round if they go 1, 2, 3, 4?
I think we are almost locked into quarterbacks at least going with the first 3 picks, which would be the first time since 1999 that's happened. I wouldn't be stunned if a team trades with the Browns and the Browns move back a little bit, so then quarterbacks do go in the first 4 selections. But I ultimately think the Browns will end up taking either the best defensive player or Saquon Barkley at number 4. But I do think that 5 quarterbacks will go in the first round, and if someone like Lamar Jackson or Mason Rudolph certainly could and has the skill set to sneak into the back end of the first, you know, kind of where the Jaguars are picking. And if 6 quarterbacks go in the first round, it's kind of funny that it would be the first time since 1983. And these are comparably, hyped drafts in terms of that quarterback spot that, you know, that was the famous draft with Dan Marino, Jim Kelly, John Elway, Todd Blackledge, Tony Eason, Ken O'Brien. So there was 3 really good quarterbacks and 3 guys who didn't necessarily live up to that hype. And you know, the majority of the talk about this class are, you know, just how many good top-tier quarterbacks there are. So I think we're looking at 5 quarterbacks in the first round with a off chance that a 6 guy sneaks somewhere in the 20s or the early 30s.
Okay, so let's say that there is that run on quarterback. What other position group could there be a run on? What other group is there such a rarity of players at, in your estimation, Chris, that we could see teams moving or grabbing quickly before the Jaguars pick?
Probably defensive tackle. I think the running back spot is very deep. The off-ball linebacker spot is very deep. But in terms of just positional value, I think, and then you couple that with how many good defensive tackles there are in this class, I think that could be somewhere in the teens to early 20s. Maurice Hurst from Michigan is that just penetrating 3 technique. Taven Bryan from Florida is not the next J.J. Watt, but his game is reminiscent. He kind of reminds me of Calais Campbell a little bit, that he can play on the end, he can play inside, and he's not just a pass rusher, not just a run defender. Vita Vea from Washington has the size of a nose tackle, but he, you know, is pretty good getting up the field, uses his hands very well. So there's 3 guys right there. And there's just so many other players. Deron Payne from Alabama, very young, but, you know, had a lot of responsibilities on that Alabama defensive line, 1 gapping and 2 gapping. So there's 4 guys right there that I think are first round caliber that are all going to probably fall in the range from somewhere, you know, from 12 to 22.
Everything you hear, Chris, this is a very good tight end class. How deep does it go in terms of guys who you think can make at least some sort of an impact as a rookie?
I'm not necessarily as high on this tight end class as the consensus. I think after the 3rd round or so, in terms of what teams are mostly looking for in their tight ends today, which is obviously the receiving ability, I think there's a pretty steep drop off. I think Dallas Goedert from South Dakota State will have, you know, will take some time to transition from that lesser competition, but in terms of what he's done at the collegiate level, in terms of being an inline blocker, he's a matchup nightmare on the outside. Mike Gesicki from Penn State, we saw him have, you know, one of the best combines that we've seen at the tight end spot since Vernon Davis back in 2006. And then Mark Andrews, the Oklahoma tight end that was really Baker Mayfield's go-to target. Those are my top 3 guys, and I think they're probably going to fall somewhere from the late 1st to the early 3rd. Another guy who I think has a very well-rounded game and would kind of fit with what Jacksonville wants to maybe replace some of that run blocking from Mercedes Lewis, Durham Smythe from Notre Dame. Obviously at Notre Dame, they use a lot of traditional, power running, and he was in line a lot. He's not Rob Gronkowski in terms of his blocking ability, but he certainly gets after it in the trenches. And we saw later in the season and then at the Senior Bowl that he showed some ability as a receiver too. And he's got that big frame, big hands, long arms. So those 3 or 4 guys, I think somewhere around the 2nd to 3rd round range is really the sweet spot for this tight end class.
Chris Trapasso with us, CBS Sports NFL draft writer. First off, how many mocks have you done so far, and how many more to go until draft night?
I've lost count at this point. During the season, I was doing one every couple of weeks, and those are really just a lot of guesses because I didn't know who was going to declare, who was going to stay in school. But since the season has ended, just with my very niche title, I've been doing a mock draft once a week, which is pretty difficult. It's fun to kind of, you know, slot guys at you know, with different teams at different portions of the first round. So for 5 weeks out from the draft, I have five more to go, and I'm not necessarily going to be mad when I don't have to do any this time around.
Yeah, this time of year, it's just get the draft over with and get some guys here in the NFL. Chris Trapasso, CBS Sports NFL draft writer. Give him a follow at Chris Trapasso on Twitter. Good to talk to you, man. We appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
Chris Trapasso joining us, CBS Sports. You know, there was a website I was looking at the other day that had a 2020 mock draft already. 2020. It wasn't his. It
was good
another
for that
one. Which, how do you even know? Unbelievable.
You don't, but that's the gimmick. That's the shtick.
I clicked on it.
Well, if you look at CBS Sports.
And you mentioned it.
They have a different mock draft up by a different writer every day.
Yeah.
Every day. And you wondered, who would, you know, people click? They do. They will click every.
He would have
it. I clicked it. Yeah.
I realized that as I was saying that.
He's looking at 2020.
Well, and I'm guilty of it too. I'm wondering how much do these things change, and they don't change all that much. A spot here, a spot there, based on a good workout. You know, if Sam Darnold has a great workout, it's going on right now at USC's Pro Day. All right, so maybe they lock him into one, and maybe they had Josh Allen there. But these guys who are doing these mock drafts every week, they're not changing all that much. Not yet, at least. Maybe the last week they will.
We'll see what happens coming up. Hey, coming up at Daly's Place, busy schedule as the calendar turns to April here in about a week and a half or so. One Spark, 2018, April 6th and 7th. The next night, Dwight Yoakam and guests. And then Thomas Redd, April 20th. Tickets available at dailysplace.com. Ashlyn Sullivan joins us on set when we return in 60 seconds. Jaguars.com live.
Call a pack of Jaguars. A jamboree. The Jacksonville Jaguars want to offer a big thank you to the five local companies who've made the Jaguars Jamboree a party that never stops. Everbank, Baptist Health, Dreamfinders Homes, Publix, and U.S. Assure. Each of these partners provides unmatched support and dedication to the team year in and year out and help make game day special. Jaguars fans, join the Jamboree and support these companies and all the partners who support the team.
Jags fans, experience Everbank Field like never before. Visit jaguars.com/tours and book a guided behind-the-scenes tour. Hear stories of great plays by Jaguars legends. Get up close and personal with the famous video boards. And see why the Travel Channel named Everbank Field is one of the 15 bucket list destinations for any football fan. Discounts available for children, first responders, and military. Visit jaguars.com/tours for tickets and details. See you at the bank.
I just looked to the playoff game as the example. I thought it was great. You know, there's a picture. Dave Caldwell's got a picture of a packed house, and you can see by virtue of the score, you know, people on their feet, their enthusiasm. And that's what this is all about. And if you don't think for 1 minute that players understand that and play into that, you walk out into a stadium that's not full, they don't have that same feeling as when you look at that upper deck and it's full.
Tom Coughlin this morning discussing the playoff atmosphere at Everbank Field, a breakfast event here at Everbank Field. Welcome back into Jaguars.com Live. Ashlyn Sullivan was there with TC today. What's up? How you doing?
I was. He was there, and we hadn't seen him in quite a while.
I know.
So it was pretty cool.
He's not on camera a lot these days. Kind of stays off to the side. What was the event today, first off?
So the Jacks MVP breakfast, it was a gathering for corporate officers and everything like that, trying to get the team excited for the 2018 season. Their goal was to raise $5,000 each corporate sponsor. Okay. It's really a leadership outside the stadium, really driving force on getting everyone excited for 2018.
Pretty cool. So TC spoke this morning. I think Mark was there, Mark Lamping as
well,
right?
He was, yes, both of them spoke.
Very cool. And you'll have a story coming up on Jaguars.com.
I will, right? This afternoon.
Now, what else did TC talk about today?
So we had a presentation, and it was a good one. That guy can get up and speak and motivate people. It was about a 10-minute presentation, and it was really cool how he started off. He said he was brought here, went into Shad Khan's office, and he said, winning isn't addressed enough here. And that was the first thing he said to him. He said, we are here to change it and to win. And that's exactly the way he did it. And he said his whole message was how to win in the corporate world and how to win just your day-to-day life.
Winning, it goes everywhere. Not
exactly.
Just football. It can run every
guy,
part of your life.
That guy knows how to win. That's for sure.
And they did last year. We'll see if they can keep it going. Of course, moving ahead. Hey, you know, while you're here.
Yes.
Top tweets.
Top tweets. Top tweets. Top tweets. Top tweets.
Yes. Let's get into
what a tune.
Top tweets for today. I know you guys are ready. Ashlyn, what you got first? So a little drama online yesterday. Huh?
Yes. We're starting off here with Mercedes Lewis. You guys spoke about it, released yesterday. At the beginning of the day, so much drama. Drama all day on Twitter about how he didn't like how it was handled. And Brian, we talked about it all day, how that wasn't like him. So at the end of the day, he comes out with this long thank you. Thank you, Jacksonville, for 12 years of service. Much more Mercedes-like at the end of the day.
Well, he's allowed to be emotional. I mean, right. He's been here for 170 games in 12 years, and he's right. He always handled his business the right way. When it was good, he was good. When it was bad, he was still good. So he let his emotions speak early, and then he let his love for Jacksonville speak late.
Right.
Well, and typically, a player release is going to have the emotions, and then over time, I feel very confident that it will settle into Mercedes Lewis will be remembered, have the relationship with the team that a 12-year veteran who has carried himself should have. I get why both he and Allen Hurns were upset at how it was handled. I really do. At the same time, I think the team in this case had to protect itself. I think over time, both players will realize that. And it will be a good relationship between player and team. I think they've meant too much for this organization and vice versa for it not to be that
way.
And
you could tell the he played tight end. It wasn't quarterback. It wasn't pass rushing defensive end. So you didn't always hear fans talking about the tight end.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you saw on Twitter yesterday, you saw in the social media world, the love that the fan base had for him. And I think that probably made him feel better. He's going to have a job, probably making about what he was going to make when he was here. So, and maybe for two or three more years, he can still play. And I think that all played into the fact that he wanted to make sure that he knew, that everyone knew how much he valued his time here.
Mm-hmm. It's probably a pretty obvious point. It's going to be a long time before we see a guy play 12 years, first 12 years of his career, and play
170 games.
Everybody wants to have that be the case all the time. Everybody knows it's not the case. But 12 years, it's going to be rare. It's going to be a long time before that happens again. At least, 8 years? Because the most tenured guy on the team now is Avery Jones and Carson Tinker, got here in 13.
Yeah.
That shows you how long Mercedes Lewis was here.
Not every position can play 12 years.
Sure, and it's not like he went away empty-handed either. He got a couple $100,000 to hang around for a week before he was sent off.
That's always nice.
Allen Hurns was one of those sent off as well, and he had some comments about Lee.
Yeah, so another release, another thank you, but his was much more different. You really didn't hear much from him throughout the day. And then what I wanted to point out here, I really liked how he said he'll miss more than anything the relationships he's built with his brothers in the locker room. And, John, I know you've been through so many free agencies. That's got to be tough. I mean, you're so close to this guy, and now all of a sudden he's gone.
Well, it is tough. And everybody knows Mercedes because he's been here for so long. And talking to a couple people around the building today, they would put Allen Hurns up around the Paul Posluszny types. And everybody knows Posluszny's work ethic, his character, et cetera. Mercedes has that too. But Allen Hurns is a top-level individual. His story, I think most people know, his relationship with his mother, what they overcame for him to even be here. I guess not that many guys I cover, Brian, where I say, boy, I'm glad I got to know that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Hurns is in that group to me, and so is Mercedes, both great locker room guys. But Hurns is a guy, not to be corny, but you sort of feel privileged to know.
High character guy, and again, I'll relate it back to what we do. There have been tough losses around here in recent years, really tough losses, and never once did they fail to talk after the game.
This is either guy you're talking
about. Either guy, right. I can remember once where Mercedes looked at me like, And he walked into the shower, and then he came back out and found me and said, no, are you ready to talk, right? And Alan Hearn, same thing. They might have wanted a moment to gather themselves. But there are lots of players who just kind of sneer at you and, yeah, not worth it, right? Okay, I don't go back to you.
Right.
But I went back to Hearn's 88 and 89 the last couple of years together every game, win or lose, because they always had something to say. The guy who sneers didn't bother with the game.
Yeah, some guys leave and, you know, you don't miss them. Some guys leave and you remember them for a long time. Yeah. And I think fans feel that way, too, about those two guys. Many times I would see both of them, particularly Hearn's, give time after practice to fans, et cetera, et cetera. Never blew them off. So, again, I think both are class acts.
Next up, Ashlyn, a little confusion on social media. Maybe the wide-eye emoji was in play here.
So often. And again, with Alan Hearn. So follow along, guys. There's a few steps here. So Adam Schefter, early in the morning, reports Alan Hearn's released. Alan replies with an eye emoji, showing everyone he knows what's going on. He's aware. Donovan Smith, offensive tackle for the Bucks, replies asking, what do you mean by that? Hearns replies, just the market. He knows the kind of attention he's going to get in the market. He's confident. He wants everyone to know that.
Well, word is he's going to Dallas in the Jets already. So
right. Yeah. He's
and
got a handle.
And would have been in New York already if it wasn't for the snowstorm, I guess. Mm-hmm. They had to flip-flop the visits. So.
Yeah, I think Alan Hearns will play. He's going into his fifth year. I could easily see him being a 10- or 11-year player in this league. Sure. I mean, I don't know that he's ever going to be a one, maybe not even a two. But he is a guy who, because of his approach, because of his work ethic, he will have a long career in the National Football League. And, again, good for him.
It's professional football. It's about the money. He showed up as an undrafted rookie free agent in a year that they had Marquise Lee and Allen Robinson both ahead of him, second-round picks. And he left with $17 million. $17 million. That's the scoreboard because it's about the money. He won.
Right.
Not That's one shabby. Reason those eyes were like this.
Yeah, those wide eyes, right. Something we touched on earlier, yes. But Mike DiRocco, our good buddy from ESPN,
yes.
Had a tweet.
Very interesting. With tight end Mercedes Lewis being cut and linebacker Paul Posluszny retiring, the longest tenured current Jaguars players are defensive tackle Avery Jones and long snapper Carson Tinker.
It's amazing to think
That's
about.
That's amazing.
It really is. That you go from a 12th-year guy in Lewis to a couple of 5th-year players who are the longest active consecutive Jaguars.
Well, and this ties in with that. There are now 0 players here who were here before Dave Caldwell got here. So, again, it's been 5 years, so it's not like he was throwing everybody out the door. But that's how fast the era has changed. And, every player here now, has, I assume, shaken David Caldwell's hand as he came in the door.
Yeah. Just a quick thought on Mercedes, and follow me on this, but he played for Jack Del Rio, and then he played for Mike Mularkey, and then he played for Gus Bradley, right?
And Mel Tucker.
And Mel Tucker. Yeah. I mean, sorry, Mel, I don't count you as one of the head coaches of the Jaguars. I just don't.
Wow.
Well, I mean, he was an interim, right? I mean, I don't.
5 games.
So the 4 coaches, and then he worked with
Tom Coughlin. Right?
So he touched, in one way, shape, or form, all of the men who have led this franchise. I just think that's kind of a unique tie for a guy who wasn't here in the very beginning, how it all kind of came back full circle with him.
All right, Ashlyn, bring us home. Last one, Will Duval.
Yes, Dante Moncrief. Thanks to Jacksonville for believing in me and my dream. It's an honor to be a Jaguar, ready to get going along Duval. John, I hate to say you were right, but last week you said this was going to happen when A-Rob got cut. You said Jacksonville will be all better when it happened, and it happened.
Yeah.
Lots of retweets,
lots
of love.
So out of Duval, everybody loves you.
Yeah.
Brian even works for you. Go ahead.
I don't think I will. Okay. I don't think I'll take that shameless opportunity.
All right. Fair enough.
It was shameless.
Yeah. Have it. Top tweets for this Wednesday. Hey, coming up, the NFL annual meeting next week. John, you'll be down in Orlando, right?
I will. And, when we go, JP, as you guys know, it's usually talking about – he's talking to your own guys. Tom Coughlin, Shad Khan, Doug Marone, we'll talk. We'll have that on Jaguars.com. Some of the league topics, I think everybody wants to know about the catch rule.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like there's going to be some clarification with it. And I would think that becomes the sexiest topic down there in terms of when you see the talking heads on ESPN, that's what they'll be talking about.
All right. So you and Patrick Kavanaugh will be in Orlando.
We'll be there.
Look forward to the reports from there. We'll be back with a recap of that next Wednesday. Thanks to our entire crew, and thanks for watching Jaguars.com Live.